Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 113, September 4th, 2013. George shows us how to build an RF demodulator.
Bob, enjoyed that TriCaster show that TWiT had on tonight. A lot of interesting stuff in there. And we're getting ready to burn some more solder down here.
All right. Well, we're going to make that happen, I want to check with Gordo, see if he's got anything else, and then you guys can kick her off here. Gordo, you're going to the, is that Hamfest this weekend you're going to?
Yeah, it sure is. It's a Southwestern Division Hamfest by the American Radio Relay League, put on by the Santa Barbara Amateur Radio Club. And I think they're going to do a great job. They've got a lot of live demos going on. And so we'll be bringing our soldering iron. So, George, what are we going to be soldering tonight? Go ahead, George.
Well, we're going to pick up kind of where we left off last week, but I have an urgent bulletin here for any smoking solder fan out there. You know, one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, George, what kind of vise is that you're using? And I've said before, it's a Pentavise. It's like this right here. And if you're lucky, you can go by your local Radio Shack store. They carried these for a little while, but they've got them on closeout. Now, normally this is about $50. You can find one of these in a local store at for only $19.97. They don't have them online, but if your local store still has any, you certainly want to stop by and get one of those. It doesn't come with a mounting base. You could build your own base or bolt it to your table or just set it up there as long as you didn't put something heavy on it. But an excellent deal and something everyone ought to have in their toolkit if you're going to be soldering. Well, tonight we're going to pick up with some more RF monitoring with the scope, I guess you would call it, and we're going to take it a little bit further. So let's have a look at that.
Last week on Smoke and Solder, we added an RF sample port to my tuner so that we could look at the RF signal with an oscilloscope. I had one hole left over on here. Let's find out what that's for this week. The RF sample was just two resistors and a capacitor tapped to the transmitter input here of the tuner. This week, we're going to add a demod output so that we can actually look at demodulated audio. We'll begin with a 10 picofarad capacitor, and this will be connected from the transmitter input of the tuner over to a junction of two diodes. We'll use 1N34A diodes. These are germanium diodes, so they're a little bit harder to find, but they are available. We'll have a 1,000 picofarad capacitor to ground and a 1K ohm resistor to ground, and that junction will go over and connect to our BNC connector as our demodulated output. Since the quarters are so tight inside the tuner there, I'm going to construct this little circuit separately and then put it inside the tuner. I'll begin with the 10 picofarad capacitor, and I'll just bend the leads out on it. Now, one of these leads will go down to the transmitter input on the tuner. The other lead is going to be our junction of the two diodes. One of our small signal diodes will connect from this side of the capacitor to ground. The cathode end connects to the capacitor, and that can be identified. It's the one that has a little green ring around it here. Now, these devices are shock sensitive. If we cut the leads, we need to isolate it somehow so that the shock doesn't run back down the lead and break the diode inside. The way I usually do that is just to hold it with my fingers and then clip back the lead. So essentially, we'll do the same thing with this other diode, except right in reverse polarity. We'll have the green band, which is a cathode, away from the junction. Now, when we make this, we want to just use enough heat to do the job. We really don't want to get these components too terribly hot. This end will be ground. On the other side of our second diode here, we need a 1,000 picofarad capacitor to ground. And thanks to my friend Jim, you remember my friend Jim, he's big into salvaging electronic components.
Whoa, okay.
He managed to salvage me a 1,000 picofarad capacitor, so we've got one for this project. The legs are a little short, but that won't really matter. In the end, it ends up easier being to just solder this capacitor across a resistor since they both run to the same places and the leads were so short on that salvage capacitor. And now that's our circuit. It's not much to it. As I showed you, it's the 10 picofarad. It's one diode to ground with the cathode up here at this junction. And the anode of the other diode goes on out and goes to our BNC connector. But also from that junction, there's a 1,000 picofarad and a 1K ohm resistor. And both of those will be tied to ground right here. So we'll tie those two together. Those will connect to the ground lug or our BNC connector, and this lead will connect to the center pin, while this lead right here will go to the transmitter input of the tuner. Now, we'll probably have to bend this around a little bit to get it to fit inside the tuner without bumping into something else, but that shouldn't be a problem. Now, our diode detector circuit could introduce some distortion into our output, and we probably don't want to leave it connected all the time anyway, so the way I've connected it here, there's our circuit, and it feeds a BNC connector. And the input to our circuit is a piece of center conductor from RG58 that I've just looped around the transmitter input lead here from the tuner. And we'll be picking up our signal off of that rather than directly coupling into the circuits. So now we know what that other hole was for. And the project's not complete until we've labeled it, so we'll know what this is in the future. Let's see how it works. For comparison, here's what an AM signal looks like when we sample the RF. Now we'll connect the scope in the XY mode. We'll hook our RF sample to the Y input and the detector sample we just built to the X input. When we feed the scope in the XY mode, we can see a trapezoid pattern. To determine the percentage of modulation, we take the voltage value on the left side of the trapezoid and get a ratio with that on the right side of the trapezoid. We use the formula, percent of modulation equals 100 times the right side value minus the left side divided by the right side plus the left side. Here's what we see when I feed a tone into the transmitter at a percent of modulation that's somewhat less than 100%. Let's calculate this and see what we get. On the right side, we can see that we've got 4 divisions high, and on the left side, we've got 2 divisions. So let's put our formula to work. 4 minus 2 equals 2, and 4 plus 2 equals 6. So that gives us 2 divided by 6, which equals 0.33. And 0.33 times 100 equals 33% modulation. This formula is not that difficult to work out, and you can see that it's given us a much more accurate representation of modulation than if we were trying to do this just looking at the RF sample. I mounted my demodulator inside my tuner, but ideally, it should have been right at the output of my transmitter in front of my linear amplifier. That way, I could measure the linearity of my amplifier in circuit. So you can see using a scope to measure modulation is not really that difficult.
Well, I just noticed I called it a demodulator in the schematic, but demodulator, demod, it's all the same thing, detector. Anyway, that's a fun project there, and I've been enjoying it. I know Bob has a scope that already has all this built in it, so maybe we'll get a look at checking the linearity of an amplifier at some point. Last week, I had asked a question, if a sine wave was overmodulated in an AM carrier, what would it look like? And I got an answer here from Ray Ingram into ARG, and he said, when overmodulating, the waveform on the scope will have a space in the horizontal axis where there's no signal. and it will look like a group of disconnected blobs. And that's correct, Ray. And it also could be flat topping. It might not be round on the top. It could be flat across there, but either one of those answers would have worked. So, Ray, congratulations. You're going to win the ARRL 2013-2014 repeater directory, courtesy of Frank and our friends over at cheapham.com. And for next week, I've got a question here that if you want to win a copy of the new Heil Ham Radio Handbook from Bob, then answer this for me. Can you measure percentage of modulation of a single sideband signal using the XY mode that we made today on the scope? And if you think you know the answer to that, then send me your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win. Now, I want to mention one thing. You know, there's been a lot of questions about the new ICOM IC7100 and how it compares with the IC7000. Well, we've just put a video together comparing the two side-by-side in a no-holds-barred SmackDown match, and you can watch that over at amateurlogic.tv. It just came out today. But right now, let's take a look at some mobile options from ICOM.
Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio and is great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70AHD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection.
Yeah, ICOM has a lot to offer in the analog ham radio market. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Everything you want to know about that and why you're there. Enter to win the ICOM weekly drawing for the ICOM swag, like this t-shirt that I'm wearing. Yes, it's the ICOM Ham Crew t-shirt. I'm not going to stand up because no one wants to see that, but you can get one just like this in just your size. Also, the a free ICOM radio. And this month, in September, it's the V8000. That's that 75-watt, 2-meter mobile, die-cast chassis, serious radio. 75 watts, you can reach out and touch somebody with that thing, I'll tell you what. And go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. All the rules are there. Check out the previous drawing winners. Sign up and good luck. And the winner of the August drawing is NK8J. That's Brad Kellison. He's in the chat room right now. Brad, you won that ID51A, you dog. Congratulations, Brad. You're going to love that. And whoever wins the V8000 is going to love that as well. So check out ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. All the information is there. And right now, let's head out towards the left coast and see what's going on with Gordon and the short shots. Gordon, what you got?
Okay, thanks so much. And you know, ICOM 70A, this is what I use when I'm doing parades and a lot of public service events, because when ICOM says it has loud audio, believe me, this radio delivers. All right, well, let's talk about the 222 megahertz band, and we'll tune in to 222 megahertz. You probably hear that in the background, and let's take a look and see what's happening on 222 that you probably didn't even know was there. So here we go, Brian. These are transmitters. These little transmitters come from ComSpec, the same company that puts out the CE64 and the TE64, some of the tone encoders. And this little transmitter is designed for pets, designed for a small little 2032 battery, and the transmitters operate on the 222 band interstitial of the frequencies for FM on 222. These transmitters are not expensive. They're like $50 for the pet tags. They can come with an external antenna like you see here, or that transmitter that you see right by my chart down there with the yellow. That one is one where the antenna is built right into the collar. Now, the heart of receiving these 222 ticker tags, as I call them, is the receiver. And ComSpec also comes up with this receiver. It is a CW receiver, 0.05 microvolt sensitivity, 150 dBm, dual MOSFET front end, 8-pole crystal filter, 60 dB attenuator built right in that is adjustable. And it comes with a little MOXON antenna. And this is all the brainchild of Spence Porter, WA6TPR, an active wildlife guy. And the different wildlife folks came to him saying, we need little tiny trackers to be able to pick up weather receivers so we know where mountain lions are, or bald eagles, or other things that he attaches these to. He also makes them for law enforcement. Don't tell anybody down on 216 and 218 megahertz for banknotes. But anyway, these little ticker tags run for a month. So if you've got a need for different types of ticker tags, he's got every style available. But the ones we like best are those that you could use for tea hunting. And what a great way to tea hunt your hound. Next time he gets out, you see the tag in yellow. That's one with a little wire antenna. Here's an antenna that is built right into the collar of Mr. Q. And as you can see, the pets really don't mind them. And the big deal is when you're fur ball or boof ball goes missing, you can track them down with your little receiver. Look at this little guy. Well, when he takes off rolling throughout the neighborhood and he's gone for a half a day, you can generally find him with a little ComSpec receiver because he's going to beep for a good month. And of course, your call sign is built right in. So when this little kitty Moo goes out and doesn't return for a day or so, you can track this cat down from the little beep sounds. And the beep sounds go for about a block or two in residential areas. And this is the MOXON antenna. And as you get closer and closer to the tick, tick, tick sound, you may discover that your dog or cat got locked up in a cabinet, as this one we're finding here. So that's the ComSpec receiver. And as you can see, the kitties or mom and dad, if they're elderly and they sometimes wander and get lost around the block, they don't even know they're wearing the ticker collar. It's only a milliwatt, so you're not going to cause any heating of the skin. And they've got all sorts of different collars, big ones for dogs. And the larger the collar, generally, the better the range. And the collars are weatherproof. And I've got a Yaesu VR5000. And when we had five pets, we could actually track each of them. And just a quick look at my radio tells me who's in close within about, I would say 100 feet. That's the tall one. And who's way out there on the left-hand side of the spectrum analyzer display? That cat is halfway down the street or maybe further. That's on the Yaesu receiver. Again, the antenna is built right into the tag. So if you want to do tea hunting with scouts, you just hang the tag on a tree or wherever, and it'll sound for a good 3.5 weeks, including your call sign every 10 seconds. So these little tags are great. And if you got an animal, the tags are not too large for them. So no matter what kind of an animal you may have, they're ripe for a tag if your animal regularly goes outside. Or if you're in a motorhome and you wonder, oh my gosh, did he escape when I was at the rest stop? You can find out. And these tags, you can also put them in a little bit of a hot wax. So if you have a overboard situation, as long as they're on the top, as you see here, there's a approved Coast Guard vest for our pooch there. You can tell where the animal overboard is by aiming the antenna. This is not a $1,000 deal. It's not $500. It's less than $300 for the receiver and the little tiny tags. Takes a 2032 battery. Battery goes for just under a month. And remember, your call sign every 10 minutes in CW. You just put the battery in, and bango, the tag will start sending this little tick, tick, tick sound. Hear that little ticking? Now, there's other things that you can tag. Let's say you're going to leave your ICOM radio at a county fair. ICOM loaned us a radio, and Ray said, don't lose it. We put the tag inside the radio, so if the radio had feet in the middle of the night, still on the fairgrounds, we'd be able to track it down. And that's done. And by the way, over my right shoulder, you can see a little bit of ham television. That's the amateur television network going on right now. Many of these pooches at Quartzsite have tags on. And catch this. Look at this next shot. This will show you how far at ground level the tags go. Bottom left is where the receiver is. Upper right and outside of the picture was a dog with a little transmitter. 1 milliwatt on the 222 band, CW, 20 millisecond pulse, and we were able to receive them and direction find over, I don't know, that's probably about a half a mile. So these tags really play big time on the 222 megahertz band. Oh, and when you get your animal back, you're going to be so happy that you tracked them down with a tag. And if you have elderly folks that wander around, maybe dementia, look at me, you could very well tag them, and if they wander around the block and out of sight, you can home in on them via the little under $300 tag system from ComSpec. There's another pooch. That's George, WA6RIK's hound, and he's beeping away. And again, you just look on the spectrum analyzer, and you can make sure that your pooch pals are still around or the fur ball is in the backyard or maybe hanging out with all that coax cable. So these tags really pay off if you've got an outside pet. You never know what your outside pet is doing, smooching with, well, all I can tell you is, wow. So the tags will let you home in on whatever you lost. So whether it's surprise Siamese or maybe you've got other exotic animals, Spence says, well, he's working on parrots. I don't know about parrots yet, but he's got all sorts of tiny little tags for all sorts of different animals. So whatever your love is for animals, there's something there for you from ComSpec. The reason I'm talking about it tonight, it's on the 222 band. It does not interfere with FM communications. So once you have this system up and running and you've got your pet tagged, just remember, change the batteries once a month, and it lets you know by listening to it when you have a low battery. And, oh, look at that. Isn't that great? He's happy that he's got his tag on. And this young lady is keeping track of her pooch that sometimes runs away, and she's got a receiver to track them down. So remember, if you've got animals, uh-oh, do not look behind you. Seriously. You'll be set with a tag. And again, here's the receiver that is used. This is made by ComSpec. And here's the little tiny tags that we are using, and they have all sorts of different types, some with antennas for the dogs and little tiny brightly colored ones. But believe me, these have paid off, and we've been able to track down our outside dogs and cats with ease. And if nothing else, you just turn it on, and when you hear this, you know that they're somewhere close. And when you're looking for them, when you get within about 100 feet, you forget about the direction finding of the antenna, but rather just go ahead for proximity, keep adding attenuation, and you'll track down that elusive ticker tag. So, yeah, there we go. So, Bob, over to you, meow and bark, and that's all on ticker tags, com-spec.com. Bob?
I guess I need to sit some of those so Sarah can keep track of me here and I'm out in the meadow playing with my antennas, right? Well, listen, you know, every morning I get on at least I listen. I'm not always transmitting. Some of the most fascinating guys on 3885 here in the Midwest, and you might want to listen in about 9 o'clock till 10:30 or so. One of them is Richard, W0BVT. This guy is the smoke and solder expert, let me tell you. I don't think he talks on anything that he hadn't built. I want to show you a couple of pictures of a couple of receivers. He just built a new receiver. Check this out. This is a fabulous job he's done. We've gotten some really nice things. That you got those up there? We go, is a different... I got another stair. It is that we go. Look at that. Wow. Beautiful work. Not only is it the woodwork, but look at the electronics. The receiver uses some of the old tubes, but I only have these two slides. You see me? Isn't that beautiful work? And he tuned in WSM and down in Nashville the other day with it, and he was telling us all about how well it worked in the morning. And he comes on every morning with a different transmitter he builds here. He's a great guy, W0BVT. Rich, you're super. But I wanted to show you what happens to some of these guys when they have a lot of expertise. He's a broadcast engineer, retired, but we get to hear some of his work. We've been moving for a year and a half, and I'm going to show you a couple of things here. You'll recognize some of this. That's where Ham Nation started. That was the stuff behind me. That's all now behind me, but that was the original console that I had there. And lots of late nights where I designed a lot of products from that lab. And of course, that lab is it's been synonymous with a lot of the audio engineers because we did some of the great microphone work there in the past 10 years with some of the pro stuff. But the console's been moved. WM9B, he ended up with it. WB9M, good friend Mike has now found a new home for all of that console. I hated to get rid of it because it was so useful. I designed it for this, and so that's what happened to the old studio. It's all gone, and we're now here in the Ozarks. A lot of the equipment is, as you saw, there's behind me. I changed my direction tonight, so you're seeing more of the new stuff. But I certainly enjoy ham radio, and of course, I love it when I can share a lot of these pieces with the guys, and that's what Mike did. So he's going to have a brand new studio, and we'll give you some more reports on Dick as we see what his next building project's going to be. It's just so much fun, so much fun. And Don, I know you have a lot of fun down there, but first thing we want to do is we want to find out what kind of news is happening around the world in amateur radio, and Newsline from Bill Pasternak is the best, right?
I think so. We've been doing it for 35 years, never missed a week. And of course, you know, the full newscast is about 25, 30 minutes long every week. And you can hear it on a repeater near you or on the web at arnewsline.org. And we like to produce a little headline version for you. And here's this week's edition. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1881, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. Ham radio operators have been called out to assist in communications efforts associated with a massive wildfire in the western United States. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
It's called the Rim Fire, and the situation surrounding its containment is so fluid that it literally changes from moment to moment. The statistics are literally staggering. Currently, the burned area stands at close to 200,000 acres. This is about equal to the size of the city of New York. It has already destroyed 111 structures and was last reported to be threatening 5,500 more. 90% of these are residences. USA Today reports that ham radio was first called upon when communications assistance was required for the towns of Tuolumne and Miwok Village and several smaller communities between them when they were placed under voluntary evacuation alert. Operators associated with the Amateur Radio Emergency Service were providing information in Sonora, California, where the evacuees were being housed and fed. Other reports say that officials in Tuolumne County soon asked ARES and RACES volunteers to help fill communications voids in areas that could not otherwise be reached by two-way radio. Hams have the ability to provide radio coverage over a large area much more reliably than cell phones, and that amateur radio has the ability to fill in communications in dead spots. For this reason alone, ham radio could be involved in the firefighting effort as needed for some time to come.
The Eris ham video transmitter is now on board the International Space Station and located in the Columbus module. Jeff Clark, KAJAC.
The transmitter was delivered by Japanese cargo spacecraft, which launched in early August. Installation will be done by astronaut ham Michael Hopkins, KF5LJG. This could take place as early as sometime in October when the new S-band transmitter becomes operational. It'll be used mainly for Ares educational school contacts. Video will be for downlink only. Uplink will continue to be VHF FM audio.
Four club stations honoring the famed Rockwell Collins collaboration will be celebrating the 80th anniversary of the Collins Radio Company with a special event operation the last two weekends of September. Stations W0CXX and N0CXX in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, W5ROK in Richardson, Texas, W4CRC in Melbourne, Florida, and W6CXX in Tustin, California will be on the air September 21st to the 23rd, and again September 28th to the 30th to take part in the event. Operation is from 9 a.m. to midnight local time for each station based upon operator availability. A special QSL card for the overall event will be available to all making contact with any of the stations, and a commemorative certificate will be obtainable for those working three or more club stations on any combination of bands and frequencies. You'll find more information and QSL instructions on the web at www.w0cxx.org. Former NASA astronaut Steve Nagel, N5RAW, will be speaking to students and the public at the ARRL Midwest Division Convention Friday and Saturday, November 8th and 9th in Lebanon, Missouri. Again, Jeff Clark.
Highlights of astronaut Nagel's visit will include a special event for science and technology students from public schools on Friday, November the 8th. It'll be hosted by Nagel along with Carol Perry, WB2MGP, who is a former Dayton Ham of the Year and ARRL Instructor of the Year. The two will host a two-hour youth forum also. That's at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 9. The target audience and program's focus is on youth and are open free of charge to all young people. The event will be held at the Cowan Civic Center with other guests that include ARRL Executive Vice President Dave Sumner, K1ZZ, Ham Nation hosts Bob Heil, K9EID, and Gordon West, WB6NOA, along with Newsline producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
And finally this week, it appears the voice of Russia will cease shortwave radio service January 1st, 2014. According to an article on the SWLing.com website, the shortwave service is closing due to government-mandated funding cuts. The Voice of Russia was known as Radio Moscow in the Cold War era, but actually first took to the shortwave bands back in 1922 with a single transmitter located in Moscow. Well, if they plan on moving those towers, they can move them to my place. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And, you know, I'm living on 10 acres out here. I could probably almost have enough room for one of those sticks with the guy wires, but that'd be great. Hey, I want to talk to you about Ting. No, that's not the stuff the astronauts drink, for crying out loud, you silly goose. Ting is a mobile service. It's I know that, dude. Ting is the no BS mobile service. Ting is an MVNO. That's a mobile virtual network operator or a reseller. They resell the nationwide Sprint network. And how is Ting different? Well, there's no contracts. There's no ETFs. It is completely contract-free. No early termination fees. None of that crud. There's no bundling or ride-along services. You choose from extra small through double extra large service levels for voice minutes, text messages, megabytes of data. It's all billed separately, so you roll your own. There's no overage charges, no penalties. If you use more than you thought, well, you just pay for what you used. Offers voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, all the other features, and they're all part of the service. No add-on charges. And no weird line items on your bill. You look at your cell phone bill, you're like, what in the heck? Ting charges you for what you use, plus whatever taxes that they're legally required to collect, and that's it. No hidden charges, no recovery fees, no BS. That's the big thing about Ting, is it's BS-free. Unlimited devices on one plan. You know, you want to have 47 cell phones? Have at it. Have as many devices as you want on one plan. You share the pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. Every device on the plan costs a flat $6 per month. It's a powerful online account control panel, too. You take total control of your account, your usage, your bills. It's all right there online. No on-hold customer support either. The number is 1-855-TING-FTW. 1-855-TING for the win. Anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, you're going to get a real person that will pick up the phone and talk to you. Help.ting.com has excellent online support, active customer forums, a simple and very powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides, and much more. And now, no longer are you charged up front. You're billed at the end of the month for what you've used. Isn't that nice? Here's how it works. You purchase your mobile device from Ting, and they got nice phones. They got real nice phones. You'll receive that in 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate the device with Ting. You have the option to select a new phone number or port your existing one. Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. This is true roll-your-own cellular service. Visit Ting today. Hamnation.ting.com. Hamnation.ting.com. You will save money. You will manage your mobile phone usage much better with Ting. Huge savings. You can figure it out right there on the savings calculator. See how much you or your company can save. And Ham Nation viewers, because, you know, y'all are special, you get $25 off your first Ting device when you sign up. It's hamnation.ting.com. Start saving today. And Ting, we love you for being a sponsor of Ham Nation. Thanks so much for the support. Let's go now from the Piney Woods of South Mississippi to the Yellow Brick Road of Kansas and see what's going on with Dale and the video stuff. More audio visuals, please, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Don. And welcome to tonight's ham video segment. We got a lot of meat and potatoes for you this evening. With the D-Star QSO party coming up the weekend of the 21st and 22nd, that'll be the weekend after next year, we thought this would be a perfect time to present an outstanding video from Kent Hufford. He's KQ4KK, and he presented a nice video about how to do D-Star. Let's watch.
Good evening, Ham Nation. My name is Kent Hufford, and I'm KQ4KK, and I live in Graniteville, South Carolina. We're going to talk about D-Star on the HF bands, on the high-frequency bands. You can use D-Star on HF. You don't need to use a repeater. And it's very simple. All you need is a ICOM IC9100 or the new 7100, or you can even use a star board if your HF radio has a 9600 baud packet port. We do nets 4 nights a week and also on Sunday mornings. If you check on dstarinfo.com, www.dstarinfo.com, there's a schedule of the nets on there, and we do it on all the HF bands for 5 minutes. And we do it five times a week, 4 nights and 1 morning. So far, I've got 22 states confirmed, including Canada, and 3 contacts in California. Here's some of my cards. Here's California, New Hampshire. These are all from South Carolina, Maryland, Louisiana, Wisconsin, Texas. That's just some of the cards. Well, how hard is it to get on D-Star HF? Well, if you have an ICOM D-Star HF radio, a 9100 or a 7100, and you're on regular HF, let's say here's an example on the top, we're on 18.148, which is 17 meters. I'm an upper sideband. To get on D-Star Voice, all you have to do is press the DV button, this button right here. Press it one time, and you notice now we're in DV. We're in DV Voice. That's all there is to it. And this is the ICOM 7100, the new all-mode, all-band HF, VHF, UHF mobile. This is a control head, and it has a touch screen. So doing D-Star on HF, D-Star Voice, is even easier on the 7100. But before you switch to voice, D-Star Voice on the HF bands, you want to make sure you check on all on the upper side band and also the lower side band.
Because the bandwidth of the voice of D-Star on HF is about 6 kHz, about the same bandwidth as AM. So you want to make sure the band is clear. Once you've checked the upper and lower sideband, make sure the band is clear. With the 7100 touchscreen, all you need to do is go in, touch the band mode, and select DV. And you are now on D-Star Voice HF. That's all there is to the 7100 to get on HF D-Star. Mike Zulu Victor, KQ4KK, try it again. Roger, KG6, Mike Zulu Victor, KQ4KK, you're 5'9 into Aiken, South Carolina, over.
Roger, KG6,
that's all there is to it. See you on the HF bands on D-Star.
Well, thanks, Kent. Great job this evening. And good luck in this year's D-Star QSO party to you. Well, you've been faithfully sending in photos of your shack for the past month. We've been compiling them into what we hope you'll find is an interesting presentation. Let's roll that video. Welcome to Show Me Your Shack, where we present a compilation of shack photos received in the past 4 to 5 weeks. Our first slide is of Jason Poplosky, KB3SAR, operating VO1AA at Signal Hill, St. John's, Newfoundland, using the same tower that Marconi used to make the first transatlantic shortwave QSO. Here's Michael Murphy, KI8R. He just recently updated his beautiful shack. And Roger Schultz, KE4BFG on VHF. And here's a nice view of his entire shack. Next, we see the shack of Harold Willis, W4HEW. He's using a Yaesu FT1000D with a Heil PR781 mic. Craig Knight, W4LGX, is a retired Coast Guardsman and highlights his shack with mementos from both his ham and military career. Next to the speaker is one of the four 1000s he used in an earlier amplifier. Has the same specs as the 3CX1500A7 many use today. The two dogs in the picture belong to Alan, M5AGY, who used to check into the Coast Guard Club while flying a 757 from Chicago to Mexico City. The Coast Guard aircraft are just a few Craig worked on during his career. He's still flying high with an outstanding antenna array, a KT-34 tri-band up top, and a 40-meter dipole down below. Dallas, the six-month-old son of Josh Bailey, K9JPD, doesn't want to miss a thing, and he borrows the Heil Pro headset from his dad often. Here he's ready to operate. And not all Ham Nation viewers are licensed. Here's longtime shortwave listener Darwin McDonald with his impressive setup. And a blast from the past from Paul Coates, AE5JU, who writes, I know this is difficult for some of you younger kids to believe, but back in the BSS days, that's before solid state, if your TV didn't work, you had two choices. You call a repairman, or you pull the tubes yourself, place them in a shoebox padded with kitchen towels, place that shoebox in the basket of your bicycle, and pedal them to the nearest 7-Eleven, where you use the tube tester. And finally, a true amateur blast from the past from Al Wyman, W3CE. He enjoys a bit of operating from the driver's seat of his 1960s Pontiac Le Mans. It was a compact car then, but it held his trusty Heathkit SB100 transceiver. Al says that now he even has trouble finding a place for the control head of his FT-857 in the minivan. That's 30 for this edition of Shack's Photos. Send your Shack photos or your video links to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv. For guidelines, please visit www.hamnationvideos.com. Well, we've already received the first two Show Me Your Shack photos for the next compilation. We hope to get that one on the air or sometime around the 1st of October. Get those shack photos to us now, and we'll get them on the air for you. To wrap up the video presentations for this episode of Ham Nation, we bring in Larry Peterson, WB9KMW. He's all set to show you how to operate slow scan television. Let's take a look.
Welcome to the world of slow scan TV. Hi, I'm Larry Peterson, WB9KMW. SSTV has been with us since the 1950s when a ham developed it. Later, it was used to record Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon. Let's see how you can get involved. Putting your SSTV station together is a snap. First, you want a good transceiver. This will normally be tuned to 14.230 MHz USB on the 20-meter band for analog SSTV. That's where many transmissions occur. One word of caution, SSTV is 100% duty cycle. Be sure to adjust your rig to 30 or 50 watts so you don't smoke the finals. Next, you'll want a computer and load it with free MMSSTV software and configure. Finally, you need to connect the two with an interface. I use Rig Blaster. SignalLink is also popular, or you may want to just connect with audio cables, perhaps with some isolation circuit. There are many examples on the internet. When you are done, it may look like my station. Getting on the air is simple. Just select a template, then add one of your saved pictures, and hit TX to transmit. Did I go too fast? No worry. I have plenty of information on my ham website at www.wb9kmw.com. See the SSTV 20 meter section. Be sure to read the QSO Tips for Beginners article. Check out that pesky slant tutorial. I also have a few how-to pieces that might help you. The most popular part of my site is the SSTV cams. These are pictures recently received by stations around North America and posted to the internet. It's a great way to check propagation. Also, it aids you in copy of weak signals at your QTH. SSTV is easy to use and it's a lot of fun. I hope you'll join the fraternity of SSTV users, and I hope I'll see you on 20 meters.
Well, thanks, Larry, and special thanks also to Dan, N9LVS, for helping Larry edit that video for Ham Nation. Dan also designed and he updates our Ham Nation videos website, and we thank him for that help. And that brings us to the Ham's Choice Awards. We'll be giving away a prize every month, and this week we've got a really nice one, a hardbook copy of 50 years of amateur radio innovation. Brian will bring up the slide. We'll show you how to vote for your favorite video. Special thanks going out to Mark Breckheisen, KB0MOF, at hamradiocenter.biz, also known as B&H Sales here in Derby, or simply the candy store in the Wichita area. There's a link to Mark's website in the Ham's Choice Awards section of the website. You check it out, and to vote for your favorite button, just click the contest button. You're looking at some of the choices there now. On the website, you can view all of the videos that have been on since the start of Ham Nation. They're either there along the left-hand column or on the archive button. So click on the top three favorite videos you like, and we'll announce the winner September 18th. And finally this evening, Gordo asked us a while back to feature a ham website of the week, and we hope to be doing that soon. To start this feature, we're going to need your help. If you'll just let us know your favorite website by going to the link Brian has on the screen, you'll need to write it down now. And when you do, we'll receive an email, and we'll pick one website to highlight here on Ham Nation. So if you think your club has a nice website, let us know, and we'll get it on the air here on one of the Ham Nation broadcasts. That's all for tonight's video segment. Remember, send your video links to Shack Photos, also to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv. or click the submit button at www.hamnationvideos.info. 73 now from the Yellow Brick Road. It's football season. We'll move up to Northern Illinois now and see if everyone's behaving in the chat room. Cheryl, go Jayhawks. And take it away.
Hi there, Dale. Thank you very much. And hi, everybody. I think we just want to make a quick comment here to Gordo. Hi, Gordo. We've got go ahead. Hi. Anyway.
Oh, you look just great. Go ahead.
Thanks. And we have WB5CCO. Rick, we had a comment for you in the chat room tonight. I just can't resist. We love your piece. And he says, Gordo can now herd cats in his dune buggy. I just thought.
Well, we could certainly try it with the tag tickers. That's for sure. Back to you, Cheryl.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I got a big blush out of that. I'm all shades of red. I know that, boy. And that's not your video distorting by any means. So let's jump into a question here from our good friend, Ray, N9JA. He says, for George, tonight, he actually emailed me this one, so How to check an MFJ 259 for accuracy, and how do you adjust it, George?
Sorry, I had trouble getting George back on. Give me one sec here.
Okay, then I'm going to just move on, and we'll go dub back to that once he comes back in here. I've got one for you, Bob, from AA6AA6VX. That would be Rich. He says, Bob, regarding mixers, sliders or knobs, what's best for ham radio? Bob?
Well, it's not only ham radio. It's anytime you use a mixer, sliders are always better because you can do a quick look over at the mixer and tell exactly what it is. You notice behind me, I've got everything shut off because I don't want anything loud. But if I wanted to bring various things up, I can take a look back here and tell which ones are up, which ones are down. I like sliders a lot, although rotaries work just fine. Thank you.
Oh, okay. And let's move on to Jeff, N3VE. He has a question. I'm going to ask you, Gordo. You might have an answer to this one. He said, I would like to know if I were to put a solar electric array on my house, what are the questions to ask about RF noise? Gordo.
All right, well, that's a good question. I would ask the installation company, is the solar device, is it CE? Has it been blessed? And also with a tiny little AM radio, if you're 2 or 3 feet away, the noise of the solar switching supply should taper off. But if you can hear this 5 to 10 feet away, then you probably have too much noise. So I would certainly ask, is the solar regulator, does it carry the CE certification, and do they guarantee that it won't radiate noise?
No, yeah, absolutely. Good one. A manufacturer should know if they can guarantee that and what's their output on that anyway. Thank you very much, Gordo. And Brian, do we have George back online for his question?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. Hi there, George. Yay. Okay, good. Ray, N9JA, had a question for you, and he wanted to know how to check an MFJ 259 for accuracy, and how do you adjust it? Can you help us out here?
Yeah, he would ask something like that. I don't know the official answer, but it depends on what you're wanting to know the accuracy of, the frequency or the reflected power readings. If for reflected power, then I would probably just use another meter and see if I got the same readings on that particular load. But other than that, no, I've never torn into mine and looked for any tremor pots or anything in there.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Bob, might you have an input on the same question by chance?
Anytime you have a question about a piece of equipment from a manufacturer, call them. Everybody has great support. And MFJ really has a lot of support. And I couldn't be without this. With all these antennas I put up this last year, this was my salvation, that and about 100. Yes, I mean that. About 100 PL-259s. But that is a great piece. So, and any kind of questions you have, whether it be transmitters, amplifiers, receivers, call the manufacturers, and they'd be glad to answer that question.
Now, oh, I've got a couple of new ones here, Bob, that I'm going to be looking at in the future.
Oh,
nice.
I really this one here.
They are nice. Those are great. You know, I even have one of those, Bob. Honest to God, it had with the matching foam case too. So now, finally, I just wanted to say that unfortunately, due to the late time frame here, you guys, I'm going to miss doing the after show QSO on 75 meters tonight. But I've got something else that I've got to tend to, and with the time frame, it's not going to happen. But I will miss you, and I love all you guys, and appreciate you checking in with me. So we'll do it next week. That's not a problem. But please forgive me for that. And last but not least, here's an announcement for a good friend down under, VK2JI. His name is Ed. He wished that I would announce this for him. He says, there are two new Australian summits on the air associations for call areas, VK2, which is the New South Wales, and VK4, Queensland, I'm not sure how to pronounce, came on last Sunday, the 1st of September, along with Ohio, Alabama, and Hawaii. So lots of new mountains to work. I thought I'd just share that with you. Kind of closing here, I wanted to just say thanks for everything, and thanks for being with me in the chat room, and all our panel and hosts. Thank you for all your answers. This is K9BIK wishing you a great evening, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Take care now.
Well, thank you, Cheryl, and we're glad to get all the questions answered. One thing that's going to happen in a little bit, Gordo, did you know 20 meters moved to 40 meters tonight? Did you know that?
Yes, I saw Dale's posting, and I think we're going to try and link up with Dale on 7197, lower sideband. And Garlic Mike will probably be up at, I've got to look on the radio here, 72, 78 or thereabouts. So those of you on one side of the Mississippi or another, take your pick. You've now got two Ham Nation nets to check into. Back to you, Bob.
Well, the reason we're doing it is that 20 meters dead by now, so we're going to try this and see what happens. Bill has been really trying to make the 20-meter thing work, but the propagation gods are not with us. So he and Steve W7 UDI, they're putting together the 20-meter net on 40 meters tonight. So now you can work two different Ham Nation on this same band. How about that? 7197. So, George, you got your 40 meter antenna up, or are you just going to be on 75 tonight?
No, I've got the 40 meter antenna up and ready to go. Cool. And Bob, I see we got a couple of minutes here. You know, we had some pictures you and I had talked about earlier from our friend over in Spain who built the RF sample that you and I did here recently. And it's George EB3FZH. And here's the inside of it. It looks like the same circuit we had there. And he had a nice cover on it, too. It looked real good when it was finished. And he also, go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead. Wasn't that cool? And this is from Spain. How about that?
Yeah, and you know, those call signs, EB3FZH, may sound somewhat familiar. And the reason is that he appeared on the December 1996 CQ magazine in Spain as the author of the Catwind 95 program.
Wow. Oh, that's really cool. What's so thrilling to me about it is that it shows that you guys and gals are listening and watching and doing things. And, you know, George and I brought you the first edition of this little gadget, and George took it to the next level, and tonight another level. But now we're getting all kinds of pictures and things in here. George, it makes you feel good that somebody's listening, huh?
Well, it does, and apparently watching too, Bob, so that's great. Yeah, y'all keep up the good work. We've got more stuff to come, and we know you're going to want to build it.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Gordo, you have fun in Santa Barbara, one of the most beautiful cities, and I hope that you have a good time there. I'm sure you will, won't you?
Yep, we have a lot of great seminars planned, one on teaching teachers and also one on tuning in the Hawaii Tropo. And we didn't there have it go. This week. We just have hot weather, not good for fires, but great for going to the beach and doing a little boogie boarding. Back to you, Bob.
I hear you. Okay, everybody. Well, we're going to sign things off tonight. We'll see you later on the band somewhere, and I hope that you join us next week. We were an hour late this week because of the special, so we'll be back at a regular time next week at 8 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Pacific, and 9 o'clock, of course, in the on the East Coast. Check us out, and we'll see what all we got going for next week right here on Ham Nation. Until then, keep it all together and keep it all in phase. 7-3 from K9EID.